All right, hello everyone. Welcome back to The Path to Circularity. This is episode 31. I'm not sure what I'm going to title it, but yeah, if you guys remember, I know it's kind of been a little while again, but I did a podcast rebrand. So again, to kind of recap what I'm, my overall vision of where I'm wanting to go, what I'm wanting to study, has kind of been narrowed down since my new job at Brightmark. It's going to be a number of different things, but it is going to be a little bit more specific. It's the overall, I would say, under the umbrella of climate change. It's always been near and dear to my heart. You know, we know how serious it's getting, and it is the next crisis after COVID-19. That's for sure. I think we all know Bill Gates released his book, How to Avoid the Climate Crisis. I don't really need to talk much about that one. I know you guys probably know about that one. But yeah, so I've got a number of things to talk about. I'm going to try, you know, we'll see how long this episode is and future episodes. I don't know how much, I want to kind of keep it the same way that I've been doing. But it might be, sometimes they might be 10 minutes long, honestly, others 20 to 30. It just all depends on, you know, what I find and how in depth, I go into it. Yeah, and anything interesting under, you know, not only the umbrella of climate change, but, economics, you know, we're going to talk a lot about that today, too, because, the path to circularity is, you know, trying to get to this circular economy. And that's, I think, for me, the most important take that I am on in terms of fighting climate change. There's, I saw a recent tweet, you know, that's saying in the climate change space that our people are kind of getting a little, I don't know, like egotistical. It's saying only our solution is the right one to fight climate change. You know, carbon capture is the only one, and or whatever. And it's like, you know, it's definitely not true. This is a huge global problem, and it takes a lot of different technologies, a lot of different players in the game. And the more we collaborate and share ideas, the better that this is going to, you know, work to our advantage. And we will get carbon neutral by 2050, some corporations by 2040. I hope that ends up happening. But let's get into what I have pulled up here, specifically what we're going to talk about. There's a YouTube video that I watched the other day. It was released on March 10th from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. You're gonna hear me quote them a lot and share content from them a lot. That's probably my biggest inspiration is going to be from them. Kind of like the Seeker YouTube channel was, for kind of like different technologies. I still probably will quote them from time to time. We'll see. But this is called Upstream Innovation. Let's talk about solutions to plastic pollution. So this is a really good one. This is a 43-minute talk. Again, everything's going to be posted in the description. Basically, what this means, upstream innovation. So that is fixing the crux of the problem, which is plastic itself, like plastic, the design of plastics. Not so downstream would be fixing the waste, like when plastic products become waste in the landfills. Traditionally, you know, we've been figuring out like what is the best solution to deal with that waste. Okay, yeah, yes, we still need to think of, you know, how best to deal with landfills. Kind of like what we do at Brightmark. We are not really an upstream innovation solution. We are kind of a downstream. We are reimagining waste. We are doing plastics to fuel, you know, through pyrolysis. But what I like about the Ellen MacArthur Foundation is that they are more of not only a policy initiative, like new policy initiatives, but yes, like upstream is tackling the problems at its source. So this, I can't really describe it all that well in depth, but it's very detail oriented. There's, but it's basically, how do we redesign plastics? Like, what kind of materials do we need to start square one from? And this is kind of gets in this biomaterials, kind of regenerative, so that we can reuse plastics and we get away from a single use, you know, take, make, and waste. We don't want to keep doing that anymore. So this is a really good one. I highly encourage you guys watch at least most of it, half of it. They also have another one, you know, they have like five key policy design, you know, initiatives that I know that was probably the video before this one. So just subscribe to their channel if you guys are interested in this at all. Like, they're kind of the front runners of like the circular economy, you know, whole big idea. So yeah, take a look at that. So, and then, so let's, okay, I want to switch to, let's talk about, a recent tweet, Sam Altman, you know, still one of my biggest inspirations. He posted on his Twitter, it's not his blog, but it's like a big article about, there's like a five-part thing, and it's called, it's titled Moore's Law for Everything. And this was really great. I wish there was like a video for it, but it is a pretty long, lengthy article, but it's really good. I'll post the link in the description. And so if you don't know, Sam runs, kind of runs the OpenAI in the Bay Area, and you know, his, you know, I feel like his overall mission is to get to general intelligence, artificial general intelligence, AGI, and super, you know, ambitious project going on there. You know, you might see, think how this is, you know, gets to the economy, but it will if you read through it. And I'm going to try to describe, explain some of it. Basically, you know, we know kind of AI is going to touch most things. It's going to touch everything eventually. How we do work, the future of work, you know, AI is going to replace a lot of occupations. And it basically it says everyone will get wealthier, much wealthier because of this. And the way it affects the economy, I just had, I scrolled up, I lost my place, but let me try to get to it. I won't talk about the AI revolution. You guys, that's kind of common knowledge by now, but the way this, I thought it was really interesting. It talks about the economy. Part three, it starts, capitalism for everyone. It starts out saying, a stable economic system requires two components, growth and inclusivity. And he calls out something that an initiative that he wants to see is called, I'm going to read this paragraph. He goes, we could do something called the American Equity Fund. The American Equity Fund would be capitalized by taxing companies above a certain valuation, 2.5% of their market value each year, payable in shares transferred to the fund, and by taxing 2.5% of the value of all privately held land, payable in dollars. The next paragraph is all citizens over 18 would get an annual distribution in dollars and company shares into their accounts. People would be entrusted to use that the money however they needed or wanted for better education, healthcare, housing, starting a company, whatever. So essentially, it's kind of like a UBI, but and this goes back to like Naval Ravikant, you know, you have to own a business. Like real wealth is happens when you own a part of a business, you know. So that's kind of where this is headed, hopefully. So let me keep kind of glancing through this and see if I can pull out some more tidbits. As long as the country keeps doing better, every citizen would get more money from the fund every year. On average, there will still be economic cycles. Every citizen would therefore increasingly partake of the freedoms, powers, autonomies, and opportunities that come with economic self-determination. Poverty would be greatly reduced, and many more people would have a shot at the life they want. A tax payable in company shares will align incentives between companies, investors, and citizens. Whereas a tax on profits does not incentives are superpowers, and this is a critical difference. If everyone owns a slice of American value creation, everyone will want America to do better. Collective equity in innovation and in the success of the country will align our incentives. Wow. Yeah. So, you know, where everyone in a world where everyone benefits from capitalism as an owner, the collective focus will be on making the world more good instead of less bad. It's all about inclusivity. Part 4, implementation and troubleshooting. The amount of wealth available to capitalize the American Equity Fund would be significant. I won't go into that. And then part 5 is shifting to the new system. So it's kind of like, how do we get this done? Yeah, this is awesome. A great future isn't complicated. We need technology to create more wealth and policy to fairly distribute it. Everything necessary will be cheap and everyone will have enough money to be able to afford it. As this system will be enormously popular, policymakers who embrace it early will be rewarded. They will themselves become enormously impossible. I mean, enormously popular. Sorry. Yeah, this is great. So I'm not going to read all of it. So the American Equity Fund. This is crazy. This could be really good. So the next segue that I found this weekend, this is why, so the Bay Area tech, you know, historically and kind of still today, so Bay Area tech people like Sam Altman, I feel like this article and like what he just presented here needs to be talked about to this woman named Heather Bushy in Washington, D.C. So this weekend I kind of looked into the overall economics of America, like who is running things. So like economic advisors to the Biden administration. I really just kind of Googled that this weekend because I don't know anything about it. And there are three people. This Heather Bushy is one of them. And she runs this a center called the Washington Center for Equitable Growth, Evidence for a Stronger Economy. And I just think what I just read about Sam Altman, So like, I want to be like the guy, the mediator that introduces this article to her, because she, I watched a video. So she has a book called Unbound. I should have pulled it up. I can get it really quick. How inequality, so Unbound by Heather Bushy, how inequality constricts our economy and what we can do about it. So this is really good. I didn't read the whole book yet. I kind of just watched a YouTube video, which I'll share in the description. And again, you guys, yeah, if I share a book recommendation, just go to YouTube and see if you can find a lecture or a talk about it. It's so much easier than reading the whole physical book. Sorry to the authors. I mean, yes, try to buy the book if you can to support them if you like it. But this is just such an easier, quicker way to just get into the principles in it. So, you know, because this is so funny, because Sam, what he wrote, it's all about inequality. Economic inequality is like the crux of the issue. During this COVID time, like the 1%, you know, tech leaders got so much richer. And we see the bottom percent of people got, you know, they either stayed stagnant or they got even poorer. And it's like, you know, anyways, she basically talks about there's a lot of evidence supporting that if we fixed the inequality, if we gave people more money and not maybe a UBI, but if we just had some kind of an economic wealth distribution, that's where the circular economy, I think, comes in. And that's what I'd love to talk to her about, these ideas, because, you know, taxing corporations, taxing billionaires, but using it in an effective way. My thought was always a UBI for those who want it. If you taxed, you know, billion-dollar corporations and the government could be doing this too, give them to these the lost Einsteins, you know, the 15-year-old Hispanic girl in New Mexico that's a robotics 3D printing whatever genius, but she doesn't have the resources to, like, you know, take her research to the next level. Give her the money. Why does Apple and Tim Cook need more, you know, and Amazon, and you know, like, we need to be feeding this, you know, bottoms-up economy a little bit more. But yeah, she has great ideas, great research. All of the research is very, you know, scientifically backed. They did a ton of stuff. I can't describe it, explain it too well. But check out her book, Unbound. And there's just so much evidence that the country would work better if we fixed the inequality. Climate change, we could fund a lot more research, and if we just fix the economy, it really does come down to that. You can't have wealth anymore concentrated in so few people. Okay, speaking of another book recommendation that I came across was called The Waste-Free World, How the Circular Economy Will Take Less, Make More, and Save the Planet. The author is Ron Gonin. I have not read this. I do need to get... I'll just share the Amazon link. I kind of just came across it. I need to kind of get into it more. Let me just kind of read a little bit of what the Amazon blurb says. Let's see. Our take-make-waste economy has cost consumers and taxpayers billions while cheating us out of a habitable planet. But it doesn't have to be this way. The Waste-Free World makes a persuasive, forward-looking case for a circular economic model, a closed-loop system that wastes no natural resources. Entrepreneur, CEO, and sustainability expert Ron Gonin argues that circularity is not only crucial for the planet, but holds immense business opportunities. Smart packaging, robotics that optimize recycling, nutrient-rich fabrics, technologies that convert food waste into energy for your home. Wow, this is going to be good. This is a good book, guys. And many more. Yes. The reason why I came across this, because none other than Mike Bloomberg has, like, the first blurb about it. I'll read his. This is what Mike Bloomberg said. So fighting climate change and investing in sustainable solutions isn't just good for the planet. It also makes good business sense. You talk about any kind of business guru out there, Bloomberg's one of the best. Best ever. He's one of the richest guys still in America, in the world. He knows business. So this is huge, guys. Ron Gonin's Waste-Free World makes a strong case for an economy that is more efficient, sustainable, and prosperous. And Ron has been a leader in creating it. So I will post this and kind of Mike Bloomberg's site too, because he's going to be a leader and in the kind of global impact climate change space as well. I'd love to talk to him as well. His site doesn't have any kind of contact page, which kind of frustrates me. I don't know how to, like, contact them. So I'm still kind of working on that. We'll see if I can find that. But all right, guys, we're almost at the 20-minute mark. Another thing that I found that's just a little bit, selfish was I But honestly, if you guys are in college campuses, towns, or are near a college, take a look at, like, see if there are any kind of sustainability offices or, you know, folks working on climate change projects, or just in, you know, fighting it in general. You could always start there. 'Cause I didn't know, but Notre Dame, that where I'm at here in South Bend, is already kind of partnering with my company Brightmark with the campus dining areas are sending some of the plastics to our facility. That's awesome. And I didn't even know about it. An article came out about that. So I'm going to try to do some work with them, see what I can do. But yeah, if you guys are in a college town or near one, maybe just shoot an email and see if there's kind of an office of sustainability. People studying it, environmentalism, environmental studies in general. I know IU, I think, has one. I'm sure Purdue might have something. But that's another way to probably get involved. You know, I'm thinking about just starting, you know, local to talk to your, see if you can get a hold of the mayor or your chamber of commerce. See if there's any kind of green, efforts in your area that you can get involved in. I'm going to do the same. There's always, I think, people to talk to, grassroots efforts, start local, see what you can do. All right, guys, that'll be it for today. Hopefully I'll get another one out, in a week or so. Until next time, guys, take care. All right.